Okay.
HMT, July 15th.
Yeah, no kidding.
You're the wrong player.
Yeah.
Did I tell you I checked on having that phone changed?
With other microphones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
$1,000.
$1,000?
Yes. Yeah, they said, send me a cost set. So I have it fixed. Yeah, actually, I think it was 782 to start with.
Good grief.
Lisa, can you hear us clearly?
I can totally hear you. That's great. I apologize. I'm in a really loud room with a really squeaky chair, so hopefully it's not too much on your end. Try not to move.
All right, we'll go ahead and get started, and people can show up as it needed or as they come online. So I don't know if we received any comments from the June minutes.
I provided comments.
Did you? Okay. So Tammy more than likely incorporated those notes. A little news about Tammy Mackey. She may be coming to these meetings for a couple more months, but after that, she's not going to be available. She got a new position. So we're going to try to replace her with someone that is a good note taker and organized and on top of it. So
okay, because that precludes all of us. So
yeah,
yeah, that has been awesome. You can tell her that it's been awesome to have Tammy at these meetings because that's just been fabulous.
Those are notes. It's like a recording.
Yeah.
In fact, it has changed one thing: is you got to be careful what you say because it shows up.
Exactly.
What's her name? More
she's actually our new supervisor. So cool. She's a Fish and Wildlife Program Manager in Operations Division with the Corps. So hopefully they'll replace her sooner rather than later. So that's something.
Is she like burn?
She is, yeah.
She's burn. Okay, that's what Scott was saying. I knew that they sort of said that's what she was sitting in for there for a few months.
Yeah. So were there any other comments for the June meeting minutes from those in the room or on the phone?
I don't have any comments, but I wouldn't mind, since my first time phoning in, if I could know who else is there.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
See, no. Tammy is the one that organizes us, and she's not here.
And I usually don't run this meeting. So, John Thorpe with ODF&W is in the room. Chris Walker from the Corps is in the room. Let's just go around, I guess.
This is Andy Traylor from the Corps.
Bernadette.
Hi, Andy.
Hey, Lisa.
Bernadette Graham Hudson from ODF&W.
Cam Sharp, ODF&W.
Ricardo Walker. Army Corps.
Rich Piskowski, Corps.
And then Lisa, is it
Lisa McLaughlin with EWEB. Okay. Thank you for doing that. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Yeah, this is Lance Kruzik. I'm also on NIMS.
Oh, hey, Lance.
All right. So we'll go through action items. The first being the North Sandian Pedigree Study, and I think that's just... What is that?
So the action was for Elise to send out the document that kind of talks about outplanting in the North Sandian, which she did a while ago,
last month,
and gave a chance for everybody else to review. I didn't really have any other comments on it. I mean, it looked good to me. It sounds like the plan on the ground that's occurring right now is maybe a little bit slightly different, or one of the options that she proposed in there, because we didn't know about the Dry Creek outplant site.
That was in the flexibility options at the end of her list of actions.
Yeah.
And it came to be, and we adopted it, it's working.
Yeah, the best option that there was, so that's good. So unless there's any other comments on that document, I think we'll just post to the web and have that as part of the record, but other than that, good to go. So we can take that one off.
Yeah. The next one was related to Liebberg Dam repairs, and Andy put together a memorandum of coordination. Do you want to speak to that, Andy?
Yeah. So Lisa is actually the one that wrote that memorandum of coordination. I just kind of helped put together the form and then distribute to the group. And thanks for doing that, Lisa. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I hope it was the level of detail you all needed.
I think it was good. Just to kind of help explain what was going on so we all have a clear understanding of it and we're all on the same page, and then what any impacts to fish might be. And so there's still another week, I believe, until next Friday that that's open for comments that we'll include in the final draft of that MOC. But I, Lisa was kind enough to call in today just to be able to answer any preliminary questions or address any comments if you guys had any. Does anyone have comments on that?
Yeah, I'm just curious what is likely to happen in the coming years with the left bank roll gate, because I think it's key to have flow through there to encourage fish moving through the ladder with the trap in it.
Yeah, is that Cam?
Yeah.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And we're actually, so one of the gates is fixed. That's the middle roll gate that failed several years ago, and there may be questions about why it took so long to fix that, and that was the whole trying to figure out what to install there, because obviously what we put in there didn't work. So what took so long was really design and then fabrication of a new mechanism. Another one failed in December, as you all know. That is currently being replaced, and then right after that, so that will take some time, because again, we have to remove the old one and figure out what went wrong, replace it with a new mechanism. So that should be done this fall. And then next year we will go ahead and replace the roll gate that's by the left bank ladder. Even though it hasn't failed yet, the other two have. So it seems highly likely that it will. There's obviously something faulty with that design. So we're going ahead to replace that. That will be fully replaced by the fall of 2016. So until then, we have very limited ability to move flow. Right now, we have no ability to move flow between the gates, because we have the middle gate operating. That's roll gate two. But then the roll gate that's by the left bank ladder, we're very concerned about operating it, because we don't want it to fail in the way that the other two did. It would be a bad day for us to have two that were not operational for any length of time. So that's where we're really being careful about not manipulating flow through those other gates. Once all the gates are repaired and fully operational in fall of 2016, we'll have full control over how we manipulate flow through there. And I agree that it's much better to be using one of the side roll gates to attract fish to the ladders. And I understand you have better catch in the bypass trap when we're operating one of those side gates. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, our hands are tied for the next year and a half, but after that, we'll be back in normal operation.
Can you avoid construction in June and July?
So construction. So for what purpose?
So that we don't have conflicts with fish moving up through the system.
So there shouldn't be, the way that construction works shouldn't actually affect anything related to fish passage, unless for some reason fish are deterred by heavy equipment actually on the dam itself. We're not doing any work in the water. The motors and mechanisms are pulled out through the pier houses. So there will be noise, so I could see that as being a potential issue. But I don't think the noise is terribly bad. Otherwise, there's no work in the water that may hinder fish passage in any way.
Do you have any sense in whether we'll have the same kind of access as we have now, so periodic access?
During construction or afterwards?
Yeah, during construction.
Yeah, so it's an active construction site just because we have heavy equipment out there. The bridge over Lieber Dam is actually closed generally from 8 to 12 and 1 to 4 every day. So cars can only get across the bridge before 8 during the noon hour and then after 4. So, but regardless, with that exception, yes, you have periodic access, assuming that there isn't heavy equipment or equipment staged in the area there by the ladder. What I would suggest you do is, if you need access, just make sure when you get on site, you check in with the project manager. Just ask for the project manager, and more than likely they'll say, oh, now you're totally cool. You don't need anything. But it wouldn't be a bad idea for you to have a hard hat with you, a high visibility vest, safety glasses, and closed-toed shoes, preferably steel-toed boots. But if you don't have those, you'll probably be fine. But if you need, I think you'll have access, but please check in.
We'll do that. Thank you. Just to update you, our operations plan for the Liebherr trapping is constrained. We are not going to operate the trap when there's numerically more wild fish passing than hatchery fish passing, and this is the first week, this past 7-day period, that we had equal numbers of hatchery and wild fish moving through the ladder. So my prediction is that starting next week, presumably very early in the morning before 8 o'clock, we're going to go in and operate the trap and
remove
hatchery fish.
Yeah, so, you know, I know it's a bummer. It's a huge inconvenience for a lot of people to have the bridge closed like that. So, you know, appreciate you trying to get there before 8. Otherwise, they won't. There's a crane on the bridge, so you won't be able to pass otherwise. So,
heck no, I love
Getting... sorry for the inconvenience, but if you get there before 8, you should be able to get in.
Heck no, I love putting them to work early in the morning. It's awesome. Then they've got all day to work.
To get all of the gates functional during construction, there should be no impact to fish passage except for the fact that we can't manipulate flow to the side gates towards the ladder, towards either ladder. But other than that, it shouldn't be a big impact.
It's a guess, I know, but personally, I think as long as we're not operating the right roll gates, we're still going to get a large proportion of the fish moving upstream through the left bank ladder. So,
and the left bank is where
the trap is.
Right.
Trap ladder. Mm-hmm.
And we won't be operating that one because it's closed. Permanently closed until it's fixed.
Hey, Lisa, this is Andy. I heard maybe it was Kurt Kramer that was talking about one of the gates was permanently fixed it, like a foot open for a while, so it wasn't operating, but it was just fixed in a position. Is that a possibility?
So we did that with the roll gate closest to the left bank ladder after the roll gate closest to the hideaway catastrophically failed, at which point we had, for a short period of time in December, two gates closed, shut, completely inoperable, and then the third gate got a stick stuck in it, and we were horrified that it was also going to fail, and then we would have no functioning gate. So at that point, that's why they locked it open, because they wanted to be able to pass some flow, but not be operating the gate. I can certainly talk to our generation manager about whether we would want to do that again. They're really sensitive about doing any manipulation with that gate, given that it's the only one right. Well, it's high likelihood of failing is what we think. But certainly, if you think that would be helpful, would that help towards getting fish into the trap?
Yes, I think so.
Our generation manager, unfortunately, is out of town till Monday, but I'll certainly talk to him first thing next week and see if that's a possibility, if they'd be comfortable doing that.
Great, thank you.
Yeah. The other issue that we have going on, and I don't know if there are more questions for, maybe I should ask that before I transition, more questions for operation at Liebherr around the gate? Are there more questions to that?
I think we're good.
No, doesn't seem like it.
Okay, so the other piece that that we have coming up is that, as you all know, we have historically low flows in the Mackenzie. Our FERC license has a minimum in-stream flow in the Mackenzie of 1,000 CFS, but our turbines actually need to be shut off around 1,600 CFS because of cavitation and other issues, and even some fish issues in our flume with having enough water in there to push fish through the screens and back out to the river. The combined flow right now at Vita, which is just above our project, is 1850, so we're about 250 CFS away from needing to shut down. And I talked with Kurt Kremers, and I don't think he's on the phone, is he? Or he's there in the meeting? No?
I'm on the phone.
Oh, hi, Kurt. So our plan is once we do need to shut the project down, the gates, intake gates, leak a decent amount, on the order of 100, 250 CFS. We, we're hoping to continue to divert more water than that to keep, we have two issues. For one, we have a dam safety issue because the canals are earthen embankments and we need to keep them from drying out. If they dry out and are, you know, dry for a couple of months and then we rewater in October, then they could catastrophically fail. So we need to avoid that. The other thing that's of course on our mind is making sure that the hatchery, I know we of course would be able to fulfill the 50 CFS water right, but just bringing 50 CFS into the canal probably wouldn't allow for cold enough temperatures and high enough dissolved oxygen to have a good quality water going into the hatchery. So our intent is to bring more water in as much as we can. We're going to be in a little bit of a bind because there's going to be a balancing act between what we're bringing into the canal and how our flume and screen operate. So when we shut the intake gates completely, the screen and the flume basically just don't operate, and we're bringing enough, we're bringing in whatever's leaking through the gate, 50 to 100, 150 CFS, whatever that happens to be, depending on head and all of that stuff. So our concern is that if we want, Kurt, you and I had talked about we were going to try to bring in, you know, 200, 300 CFS to make sure that we kept the canal circulating. The concern is that at that level, we'll still have some flow going through the flume, and we're a little worried about fish stranding in the flume because it's not quite enough flow to push fish through the screens and out, but it's not low enough flow to keep them out altogether. So I just want y'all to be aware that that may be an issue, and so you know, we'll see what happens. We're going to do the best we can to keep as much water as we can in the canal, but it'd be a good idea just to have that in the back of your mind, Kurt, that you may have some temperature and dissolved oxygen issues if we do in fact have to shut down in the next couple weeks and are really down until, you know, October.
Okay.
Hey, Lisa, this is Andy again. The flume that you're referencing, is that around the Liberg powerhouse? Is that a bypass?
The flume is basically where the trap is for the juvenile trap there at right there at Liberg Dam.
Oh.
It's the bypass from the Liberg screens back to that puts the fish back into the river there just below the dam.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. And you need a certain amount of water in that to have it run, you know, effectively and have enough flow to get fish all the way through it. So we really haven't experienced this before. We have never thought about having to shut down the project for months at a time due to low flow. So we just don't really have a good sense of what it's all going to look like.
But Lisa, you still would try to maintain, if it went to 1600, you would be trying to maintain at least 400 in there at that time until you got to the point where you think the flumes would be compromised?
So I'm going to need to, when we get there, actually go out and just look and see what it looks like. I talked with Bob Vigil this morning, and he was concerned that that wouldn't be enough flow for the flume. So, and I know, Kurt, that's what we had talked about. So I'm just, when we get closer and it looks like we're going to have to shut down, I'll just go up there and we'll have to, you know, we can all talk about it maybe on site and take a look and see what it looks like.
Okay.
That work?
That looks good.
And we're also going to try to get some, we're going to get some temperature monitoring equipment there in the canal so we can monitor as well. Because not only are we worried, of course, about the water for you, Kurt, but we also do have a lot of resident trout in the canal. And we want to maintain water quality for them as well. So, it's going to be maybe a little touch and go. Depends on how warm it is for the next few months.
Sure. Pray for rain.
Yeah, exactly. So on that note, I will talk to our generation manager about locking that roll gate over on the left bank ladder open to get some flow there. Like I said, we do have a minimum in-stream flow that we're trying to maintain, and so I'll have to check with them about how they feel about the automated controls and being able to maintain our minimum flow while having one of the gates sort of locked in an open position. It might have to be a very small opening for us to feel comfortable that we can continue to manipulate. Because I can't remember, but I think a foot opening is a lot of flow.
Sure.
And we don't want to go with too small of an opening as well, because we have some concerns about, of course, you know, fish and other things getting trapped in too small of an opening. So we'll just, I'll think about that and talk with our generation manager and see if there's something we can figure out.
Cool. Thanks, Lisa.
Yeah, for sure.
Any other questions for Lisa? All right, thank you.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to sign off. I got to hit the road. But thanks, and if anyone has questions after this, feel free to give me a call. If you don't have my contact information, Andy's got it, Kurt's got it, I think Lance has got it. So
it's on the MOC that was sent out as well.
All right, great. Thank you very much. Take care.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks, Lisa.
All right, instead of wrap that portion up, those comments are due what date again?
I think it's the 24th, which is next Friday.
Okay. All right, the next item, Cam, you were going to put together a study plan with Caudill.
Good luck.
Okay.
No, it kind of fell to us. I mean, there's no avoiding it. We had to stop outplanting fish above Foster because the water temperatures in the only release site we had went to above well over 60 degrees at 8:30 in the morning. That's the Gordon Road, and that means that we can't outplant fish.
Went above what? Sorry.
Above 63 degrees at 8:30 in the morning, so it probably ramped up well over 70 by the end of the day.
I said 60.
No, 63. And then, so the option, there's only one option remaining, and that's to put fish in the holding pond, long-term holding pond at Foster, and wait for water temperatures to cool. So I work with George and Chris's people, and we... George's people radio-tagged fish that went into the pond. We've pit-tagged every fish that went into the pond. We've got DNA samples from all those fish, and we've got a system in place so that any morts that happen in the pond will be screened and checked. So everything is all preset. So as soon as temperatures come down and flows come up with both, then we can load those fish and take them up to Gordon Road and release them. So the study plan basically was forced upon us. So we've got a good number of fish that were tagged and released up there prior to the decision to use the long-term holding, and we'll have probably something in the order of 200 fish, and we're totally guessing how many is going to come in late in the game, but 200 fish that will represent the protracted holding and late outplant fish. Pretty good sample size to see whether we have a significant effect where we have higher pre-spawning survival. I guess that would be higher survival on the study groups. 400 fish are up there prior, 200 fish are up after. Pretty confident we'll learn something about it, but also because of the extreme conditions this year, we're pretty sure that we know what the outcome is going to be. I mean, yeah. In a normal year, we don't know exactly what happened, but this year, I think those fish are going to die in large numbers, the ones that are up there now.
Is Brett injecting those fish that they're holding?
Yes, we're using both the penicillin-based one. What is that? Draxin for BKD, yeah. And... is it antimycin?
We haven't injected any of them yet because we don't have the Draxin yet.
Okay. How many have you got in the pond? 12?
Yeah, something like 6, yeah. 12, 15.
Are you going to inject those throughout the season then, too?
I guess so. That's what Cam said he wanted.
Yeah, I mean, Tony was big on that several years ago, that the survival, you know, in the ponds is pretty decent. It's just the ones that the river die.
Yeah.
And that's because you got on, you know, life support while we got them in the hatchery.
So did you order the Draxin, Greg?
Yeah, and yeah, we just need to get it from Craig. He just came in.
Okay, I can have it delivered. What's your next day, Friday?
Tuesday.
Okay.
The Draxin's in a jar on Colin's desk.
Okay.
How long will those radio tags last? The ones in the pond are already radio tagged?
A long, long time. So, Greg, Brad, a question for you. Perhaps you answered this already, but is there a thermal record of what the temperatures are day to day, hour to hour in the holding pond?
I don't know. I haven't looked on the HMI panel yet. I just got your email. So I'll have to look and see if you can go back, if there's some sort of database that it records all that stuff in there or not.
Okay, so as a backup, would you mind if we hung a hobo temp or two in those ponds?
Okay.
Thanks. Cool. All right, we'll do that.
Cam, was there, I didn't catch, did you say, was any of those upstream put in the reservoir?
Yes, we have Calkins releases, pack saddle releases, and Gordon Road releases, mostly Gordon Road, because the Paxsaddle and Calkins were not usable for
okay.
your releases.
400 up, and what was the record?
I don't know the numbers off the top of my head.
Okay, that's all right.
It's in Brett's report that comes out. Brett, perhaps you have it on the tip of your tongue, but it's in the
I don't have them tabulated just yet, but I know there's 38 fish to Calkins. And then we kind of quit because the water was getting so hot. And then we have 462 up total. And then we say we're holding 17 right now. It'd be like 407 up and 38 at Calkins.
Right, I'm going to have the spreadsheet right here. We could, if you've got it.
No, I'm just curious on how that study design looks so far. So you got three groups, but the reservoir group's kind of small.
Right. And probably for very good reason.
Yeah, so. Thanks.
Anything else regarding that item?
When did we stop out planning up there? Was it when the last day was? I can
look. I don't have these memorized, no.
Come on, Cam.
I got it right here. Why do I need to memorize something that's on a spreadsheet?
Brett, do you know when you guys stopped doing that? Was that like last week or 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, again, I didn't hear the question.
When did you stop out planning? It was last week on like the 1st.
I believe, where am I here?
The 10th.
On the
July 10th.
That's right.
What was the last day of our plans?
Separated. July 10th was the last time.
Okay.
No, that's when we started. So we started holding them July 10th, I believe, and the 9th.
The 9th was the last day you outplanted? Except you didn't outplant any Chinook that day, so...
Yeah, the second... I don't have the dates on one of my sheets on the second half of it, so it's kind of hard. I have to go back and count. So the 30th is what I have. I think the last day we outplanted.
Cool. Thanks, Brett.
Yeah.
Any other questions? All right. Moving on to action item 2.4 is related to a management strategy that's used on the Rogue that basically manages flows based on temperatures in the lower river. One of the tasks was for Greg Taylor to send that out to the group. I don't know if folks have taken a look at that or not. And then kind of the next steps were to put together some sort of work group to kind of look at how we might potentially use something like that in the Willamette. And so that's kind of where we're at. I know myself and Greg Taylor, and maybe Andy will be involved with that, but I didn't know if anybody else, whether Lance wanted to be involved, you, Cam, or somebody
so,
else.
So not me.
Okay.
It's a complicated, very, very complicated system, and I think we have people in the agency that are managing considerations about flow. It seems like it's one of those issues that has to happen at a high level. We'd go round and round and round, and I know nothing about it.
Well, I think you could, at the technical level, you could put something together, whether how you might use temperatures in the lower river to adjust your flows, and that's what they do on the road. And as you mentioned, yeah, that stuff is managed at other levels, whether it's our water management team, but there's various things that are considered, whether it's maintaining minimum flows. Right now it's based on all flow.
Mm-hmm.
Temperature, I mean, the thought is, yeah, more flow will influence temperature, but the thought is maybe temperature is a better metric and maybe we can influence that, but not knowing and not having dug into the data, I'm not sure how that would look or how it would work or if it would even be feasible.
So I'm not part of it, but there is a flow management team.
There is.
Are you on it? Who's on
it? I'm on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chris chairs
it. I chair it.
Tom
attends that. Yeah.
Tom's the formal...
Tim Harden.
Yeah. Tom's the formal contact. Typically, at least Kelly's on the line also.
I'd be very happy to provide any technical support I could, but it seems like that flow management team is the team that should be considering alterations to the policies that we have in place. And I'd like I said...
Yeah, no, I think that's kind of I mean, that's where it gets managed. Mm-hmm. But if there's people outside of that team that want to provide input, I think it will be important. Because not all the people on that team have all the necessary expertise in terms of managing a system like that. Whereas people on this team might have that expertise. They're more, a lot of them are, it's all flow oriented, and it's all focused on minimum flows and ramp rates, and not the temperature aspect isn't considered at this point.
You know, one suggestion, we have the ResSim models the Corey uses to look at different flow management options in terms of the volume coming into the reservoirs and discharge. That allows us to balance and understand what we can do with discharge in the system. And then GS created a series of models that they manage, the Sequel W2 temperature models. I think they use one other platform. But if a technical level group provides some parameters, temperature targets, ranges, Cam brought up a good point. What I think we need to do is check in with GS about their ability and what's the calibration range of those temperature models. They did cover, I think, moderate and wet years. I don't know how extreme they got in terms of dry, hot years and how those models might be useful for those conditions. But if they don't cover that, what does it take to get them calibrated at that level? And then we have a very quantitative, precise approach to looking at flow and temperature, because temperature and flow can be very well modeled.
There's so much work going on with climate change issues associated with, you know, modeling just like that long term. There's so much overlap between what we think 50 years out is going to be the consequences of global warming. I'd be astonished if there's not some people that have thought about exactly that issue. What are the exceedances for temperature targets in big systems like the Deschutes, John Day, that'll happen 50 years out? So yeah.
Water 2100, the project OSU and other regional universities, they have been doing some of this kind of modeling, flow temperature based. It'll probably be another area to check in on what they've accomplished too already. Because they're looking, I mean, the whole purpose is looking at climate change effects on flow water availability.
Okay.
So Catherine Tacklin, Catherine, she manages the USGS contracts that we've had for temperature modeling.
Yeah.
So it seems like we might want to have some internal discussion about who would be the best reps for the work group, but we can always draw on other people in the agency
that's necessary.
So I don't know what the next step is in putting together this work group.
I think maybe I can go back and see what we can do in terms of the modeling that's going on. I think this initially came up within this group because this team seems to work issues at that level, whereas the flow management is, it's okay, what are we going to do with the dams today? especially this year and right now, we've just been focused on balancing whether or not we can maintain flows in these rivers for as long as we possibly can until it rains. So I'll check in with those folks and put something together.
Can I interject an aside?
Sure.
I have to see whether it's on the agenda. I don't think it is. It's just something that's bugging me. So, water temperatures in the Detroit Reservoir, our calculations, Greg Grebemer's calculations showed that about a week ago there was about 14 feet of reservoir elevation between the thermocline and the intake, the water that feeds into the Big Cliff Reservoir,
yeah,
which is the water that feeds into his hatchery,
yeah,
the trap. 14 feet of elevation. And the projections that you just sent out yesterday show that by about October 1-ish or so, those 14 feet are gone. So it's going to be warm.
Yes.
How long does it take to get from Detroit for warm water to show up in Minto?
I wouldn't think very long.
So
I think Big Cliff's about a day.
I was hoping somebody would say, okay, you got a couple of weeks. I mean, you understand the likelihood with the 5,000-ish fish that are between Minto and Bennett right now is they're hung up because of cold water.
There's no doubt a warm slug of water's coming down.
And those fish are going to come up. That's what they're going
to
do.
That's why we wanted to get the reservoir as high as we possibly could and hopefully maintain it, get to spillway crest, but it never happened.
Is there any operations where we can go from the penstocks to the middle RO? Because that's another 82 feet or something down. Or do they have to go through the penstocks?
No, I think you can go through the RO, but I don't, I mean, I'd have to check to see if that's what the current plan is. But temperatures are still going to be super warm.
You're concerned with a huge pulse of fish.
There will be a huge pulse of fish entering Minto very rapidly. And a very large number of them are unclipped wild fish. So, okay.
Well, yeah, Bart's seen over 700 and we're at about 271.
There was a discussion at last week's flow call about using Hills Creek and Lookout simultaneously, and I think in part to manage flows between those dams, but it also meant a more moderate change in temperatures in those reservoirs and below. That could be considered here for Detroit Big Clift, where we make that transition sooner, so it isn't a drastic switch. I don't know if that's feasible.
That pool's a lot more flashy. I mean, it goes up and down.
The Big Clift pool you're talking about?
Yeah. So I don't know. I'll have to look into that.
Yeah.
From our part, we'll be ready. I'll have staff on the ground and everything we need to get these fish moving as well as possible. There might be a need for another truck or two or something like that. But you're laughing.
We'll be ready. Is Greg ready? Actually, you know, the truck question probably will be answered that everybody else has done the bulk of their work by that time. So you should have some trucks available.
And if we're not out planning at Foster, that's the closest truck we could use.
Oh, cool, yeah. Greg, do you think that's a positive idea? Get another truck on site and a driver, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I wish I knew the dates they were coming. I thought we got to 55 yesterday, so I thought we'd have a push yesterday and today, but there's only about 25 fish that came in, so I don't know what it's going to take to get them there. But
well, the earlier those fish arrive at the trap, the better. I mean, we don't want them August 1 showing up at the trap and spewing eggs all over.
Yeah, well, if we look pre-2007 temperature, I'm going to see 60% of my fish after about the 10th of August, so the condition's still pretty good on the fish. I kind of like them out there, but that's why I'm trying to calculate depth and what ROs and what, what the temperature's going to be in the next week or two, because I think that 14 feet of water that had some coolness to it is going to probably go away quickly.
Can they tell them that? The flow folks, can they tell them when the water's temperature is going to go up?
They can give you an estimate.
Yeah, I was just trying to look at the temperature strings with current elevation and then the turbine inlet and then the two sets of ROs. I guess the bottom RO is not an option, but the middle one might be.
So I'll look at estimating that and then also the plan for use of the ROs.
My idea, I don't think it's valid, because if the thermocline is above both the penstocks and the ROs, we're just going to be playing out of cold water by the time we get down there to those elevations. There's just any blending option left at that point.
Man.
So one of the other issues that we've dealt with in the past, but we're really dealing with this year, in particular like the North St. Am, is the discrepancy between below the dam temperatures and then above the dam temperatures during outplanting. And so I hope everybody's aware of the situation where, these fish will show up at Minto under relatively cool waters, and then if we're going to outplant them, they're going into hot water above the dams that don't meet outplanting criteria, but kind of is what it is. Everybody's aware of that, right? That situation.
This is Jeff. How warm are they up there?
We're pretty good on Brighton Bush. The other day was almost 55 and a half, and the North St. Am, I actually went all the way up, looked at the outplant site, possibly up at Big Meadows. We're 54 to 56 and a half in that section.
So they're fairly comparable right now.
Yeah, I think in the North San Diego, we're actually pretty good.
No, that's good.
Wish I could say the same for the South.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, any other discussion on that? Moving on to updates. Greg Grimmer, you're up for Marion Forks and Minto.
All righty, Marion Forks, we're about three quarters of the way through the marking of the 1.7 million Chinook we have up there. Water's disappearing quickly. I was up there the day before yesterday. Marion Creek starting to drop. It looks like, you know, dry years in August. It's at about 56 to 58. Horn Creek's still at 47, so we're mixing on most all the ponds. Fish are way ahead of size. We'll maybe actually hit 9 fish to the pound for the first time ever. Fish health is pretty good, except for some surrogate fish that we're trying to control some sizes on. They broke with cold water, but they're being treated with now. Yeah, everything's going good. Our contingency plan at Marion Forks is if we run out of water, we'll have to take some the North San Diego stock Chinook down to Minto earlier than we really want to. But we have a pond set up ready to go if we need to move fish down there. But everything else up there is going pretty well. Minto collections continue to be fairly slow. I think we're at about 1,800 fish. We are moving the non-marked fish. We have the new outplant site. We call it Dry Creek. It's just upstream of the blowout bridge. Big thanks to the Rare Earth Timber Company for allowing us to access their property, put in a little makeshift road and a landing, and we've dumped a few loads of the non-marked fish in there, and they're looking good. We're still putting some in Horn Creek, and then the marked Chinook are still going into the Bright Bush. So, so far we don't have a mortality, and we got about 600 broodstock on site, so they're looking pretty good. Yeah, we're just waiting for that big push of fish that's going to hit us any day, I guess.
All right.
That's about all I got.
Brett, what's up, Sandy and Foster?
Things are going okay here. The fish seem to be moving better this year. We've been doing that kind of experiment with led up by U of I with the two different treatments in our ladder opening, where basically we're running it kind of alternating between the auto setting, where it's maintaining that foot differential, and just wide open. And so far, I really haven't seen anything significant, any significant differences, but I don't know, maybe it helps just changing the flow pattern. I don't know. But anyway, whatever, or there may be the smell of the new facility last year kind of slowed things down. We don't know. But anyway, fish have been moving okay. We've got a total of 5,222 hatchery fish so far, and 461 unmarked fish for a total of 5,683 adults. On the Chinook side, all unmarked fish are going upstream, and as we talked about a little earlier, we just started holding the unmarked fish to be outplanted at a later date due to high water temperatures in the South Fork. I've been ceased all recycling due to low water, and been selling most fish to the buyer, keeping brood stock. Our brood's been holding pretty well as well. Summer steelhead numbers are really low. We've only got 440 fish total, and 411 of those have been sent for kept for brood. We need about 11 to 1200 for brood. So we've got Clackamas, Minto, and Leeburg holding fish for us, and we've already received one load from Clackamas, and we're going to go over and get some fish from Minto next week and get some from Leeburg next week as well. But hopefully between the four facilities, we can get the brood needs met this year. And juveniles, we are summer steelhead juveniles at the hatchery here, broke with cold water disease, but that's normal. The treatment took care of it, and they're looking good. Our Chinook are looking good. We just received fish from Willamette, put them down into a holding pond, so those are looking really good as well. Marking's been delayed a couple weeks, so we're hoping to get them over here as soon as possible, and so we can get our fish split out. And That's about it, fish-wise.
All right. Any questions? All right, Mackenzie, Kurt.
Okay, well, we have collected 5,457 fish so far. 83 of those have been unmarked. We've given out over 40,000 pounds of fish to food sharers in the tribal communities. We've been holding our broodstock and our outplants that we're holding are doing really well at the moment. Listening to Lisa talk about the flows for the canal obviously could be an issue. Comparatively, in 2003, when they were doing construction at the dam on their screening, they only put 50 CFS around the work site, and we had temperatures spike up to 72 degrees and lost 40% of our brood. So it's definitely an issue to see what will happen this year. That was pretty extreme. I certainly hope it's not going to get to that point this year. Different situation, so let's hope not. Let's see. We've had our juveniles. We did have some troubles over last month with bronchiolosis. They were treated, and they're doing very well at the moment. I think, you know, this is early for us to get that, and, you know, this could be a tough year for everybody. Fin clipping just completed, so we've clipped over 630,000 fish. Of those, 300,000 were cut wire tagged. And we're just hanging in there, hoping to be praying for rain.
Yeah, no kidding. All right.
That's all I got.
Cougar trap. Greg's not on the phone. Do you have any information on that, Andy? Last I heard,
really.
Which was a while ago, was right when they opened the trap after the unit was out, they got fishing, like 80 or so fish that were tagged. Last I talked to Chad Helms, the guy on the ground, and Greg Taylor mentioned that they hadn't seen many return again.
So 20-ish about a week ago. I don't know if any more have returned since.
Okay.
I saw Greg share a report yesterday. There's 20 fish have returned again.
Okay. 145 sticks in my mind as the total number of fish.
Yeah, I think
returns.
That's right.
I had 150 something is what like I recall.
Right. So...
Well, Emmett, is Dan on the phone, or is that you, John?
He was going to call.
Yeah, I'm here.
There he is.
So, Willamette, we're still in our marking. We've got all our Chinook done, starting steelhead today. We had the group of steelhead that we got from Oak Springs broke with cold water, so we had to treat them. But the other half that we raised so far have not broke with cold water. So we started doing steelhead today. The rainbow have got cold water and trichodina, so we've been losing thousands of fish a day on that group. We're hoping that we've done one treatment, but they wouldn't eat the medicated feed very well, so it didn't do a very good job. But we're hoping by maybe over the weekend that we'll see the loss start going down on them. The adults that we're holding up here at the hatchery for brood are doing relatively well. We had some 66, 67 degree water a few weeks ago, and the loss kind of spiked. We're starting to see some sea shasta in them, but we haven't hit our big losses like we did last year as of yet. But we're about a month to 6 weeks early from where we started seeing the sea shasta last year. So as everybody is probably in the same boat, everything's early. The Dexter, we've worked about 7,500 adults as of yesterday, and there's still some down in there. We're going to try to move them next week. We had our some stuff go wrong with our lib truck, or we would have probably moved a bunch tomorrow, but we're kind of on hold there. The juveniles down there are showing signs of costia. We got pathology coming tomorrow to check them out, but again, we're about 6 weeks ahead of schedule of when we usually start seeing that sort of stuff hit. So water temperatures are going up.
We're averaging about 62 up here, and he's 64 down there. So, and I think Taylor swung in there last week and said that plans are it's going to start going up from here on out at Dexter.
So,
Dan?
The flow at the hatchery is still pretty good. Temperatures are high, but we're still doing okay on our flows.
Okay.
So what have we done in the past at Dexter when we had these low flow conditions in terms of, I'm thinking about the juveniles that are going to be there when we get these really warm temperatures.
Never had this before.
So what we talked about is making sure there's medicated feed on hand, pre-ordered and ready to go.
Is there anything else we
can do? Yeah, I mean, we'll order medicated feed as we need it, but it's one of those things, you can't have it on hand. You have to have a prescription, and you got to know the sizes and all that sort of stuff, so you can't just have a bunch of it sitting there. But we've never had this situation with warm water, obviously, all over the state. Plus the fact that they're working on lookout, so the flows are down.
All right.
I hate to suggest it, but could we move some of the fish off-site?
It's a lot of fish, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no place that can handle those kind of numbers. I mean, we have the contingency plan is if it gets bad, we'll just pull screens. My fear is that because of the intake level that we have at Dexter, putting them out into the river, the water is going to be way warmer out there than it even is in the ponds. Okay, and with what the temperatures are in the lower river, what's going to happen if they migrate down? Last I saw it was 78 at Oregon City. So
83 below Willamette Falls.
Wow.
I know what'll happen.
Yeah, well.
I guess it's whether or not you want to see them dead or not.
I don't.
I hate it.
You let them go and they'll die down there, or you hold on to them and they die up here.
Yeah, it's a lot uglier when you have to pick them out.
But when they have a fish kill like that, aren't the regional biologists involved in that instead of the hatchery?
Once they hit the river, they're the DB's problem.
That's what I thought. That's what I've always considered.
I say you hold on to it.
Yeah, we can laugh.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it could rain like crazy and have some cool enough water.
Yeah, we've actually had some thunderstorms last week that really helped our water temperatures. We got some flows. Extra flow in the river, and the temperatures dropped by 5-6 degrees, but unfortunately it didn't take long for them to start going back up.
All right, any other questions for Dan? Fish counts.
Lieberg, I'll start with Bennett's. Counts are way down at Bennett the last couple of weeks. Total of 36 Chinook came up over Bennett's. My crews have surveyed down below. They're not seeing live fish. They're not seeing dead fish. Pretty sure that most of the fish that made it up as far as the tributary pushed up over Bennett Dams, and what we've got is what we've got right now. And we're not likely to see any more. Everything else is sort of in that bottleneck down at Willamette Falls. So, total counts over the Bennett's is 7,364 Chinook salmon, of which 879 are not marked and adults, and 6,414 are ad-clipped. A little low compared to the last couple of years, but we're still closing in on 1,000 natural origin fish returning to the North Santa Ana. I think that is positive. The trouble is that Minto's only seen... Greg?
Yeah.
How many have you seen?
281.
So the vast majority of them are still between Minto and at it somewhere. But it's been instructive for my crews. They went down, they were told to look hard, find these fish. We know there's 5,000 of them. They saw 50.
Huh.
50. They're there. I know they're there. Anyway, we're waiting. It'll happen.
We're going to go dive some of those deep pools.
Well, we're going to do some snorkel surveys on the Brighton Bush, so yeah, maybe we will do that.
Is the sport fishery still open on those Chinook?
Probably, yeah. Greg, you'd know that better than I.
Yeah, the fishing's still really good for those that are still out there trying. I mean, the line hole, it sounds like, is packed. I know they're killing them in the Herdy. I've catching them under Deep Bridge. So the fish are there. They're just not moving.
Yeah. And then at Leeburg, we're sitting on about a count of about 1,500 unclipped fish over Leeburg Dam, and then about 30% total clipped fish over Leeburg Dam. So a preliminary PHAS, which we are certainly as biased high, of about 30%. As I alluded to earlier, the counts of hatchery and wild fish going over Leeburg have, in the last week, equalized. So it's 50-50 hatchery wild, and as I wrote up in the operations plan for Leeburg trapping, as soon as it dips down below where we have more hatchery than wild fish, we're going to start operating the latter. Mike Hoganson's on board. He's ready to go. And I think we'll probably start it next week if it's a nice, smooth kind of projection. Only a small number of fish removed early on in the season, but I don't have a copy of it and I'm not projecting it. But if you look back at some of the historical patterns of movement of hatchery and wild fish that was in the operations plan, there were years where there were very large numbers of hatchery fish moved in September. And that affords us the opportunity to remove large numbers of hatchery fish if we get a year like that. If we get a year like some of the other years where it's just very small numbers of both hatchery and wild fish moving in September, it will be less successful. But that's what we got.
Mm-hmm. Any questions for Cam?
So Cam, you haven't removed any fish out of the ladder yet?
Nope.
Is that I guess I'm kind of curious why we, you know, on a low water year like this, everything shifted up. Seems like we could have started it earlier. Was there, I assume there's a conscientious decision not to.
Yeah, when I put the original plan together, I wanted to be super conservative. So we have a threshold that I picked. You're allowed to change it. You're the DB. But I picked a threshold
I'm sorry, I wasn't here.
I picked a threshold of 50-50. As soon as the number of hatchery fish exceeds the number of wild fish and the number of wild fish is absolutely low, then we'd start handling them and operating the trap.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Stick with the plan.
Yeah, I'm sticking with the plan. That's it. It'll be next week.
All right. Moving on then.
You skipped a Leeburg hatchery update.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, you did.
Leeburg hatchery.
Yeah, I got that.
There's nothing big going on.
Okay.
That's like they have some cold water Z's that they've dealt with, but other than that, things are flowing fine.
Is the summer run size in the Mackenzie down just like everywhere else?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I can't remember how many fish he's. You said 411 fish he's recycled, but yeah, everybody is low. We're going to have trouble sweeping up enough crumbs to take care of the South Sandy M broodstock.
So these are fish that went out predominantly 2 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
What was going on? I was here. I don't remember there being anything disastrous. Ocean conditions, nobody was telling. Was that when the blob started? It was 2 years ago. What happened years ago to wipe out all of our summer steelhead basin-wide? It's not a hatchery operation.
It's angling down, too.
It's not, and it's not just Oregon. This is happening in Washington, too. Right. Same thing, Skamania. The runs are way down. It's something about the
ocean
coming up the Columbia River. This is not a good year.
So when are the Chinook that went out at the same time coming back next year?
The Chinook actually went out earlier, for the most part. They go out in February, March. The steelhead tend to peak going through Oregon City in May.
Right.
And that year, we had early spring that warmed up. We had 60-some degree temperatures in the Willamette during May.
that probably didn't help in terms of disease. And it was also fairly low clear water during May, which doesn't help the predation issue.
But that's still focused on the Willamette. It's not
yeah,
just
those
Willamette.
Are two strikes against everything coming out of the Columbia. And then you throw on top of that some blob thing out there in the ocean, and you got a third strike, or whatever else happens. So.
Very soon we have a update from Lori Whitecamp.
Yeah.
It's going to be an online presentation on ocean temperatures, ocean conditions, mm-hmm. the blob, and all that. If anybody's interested, I'll send the link around. You can just log in and listen to what she has to say.
Is that the thing that's coming up on Thursday?
Next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday.
Wednesday, okay.
Yeah, send it up, Kim.
Yeah.
All right, we got Leverage now. So the first, or I guess the fourth agenda item is the funding status of the Cougar Pedigree samples that were from 14 and 15. You sent an email, but I didn't.
Yeah, I'm happy to report we're processing funding of those two sample years. It's in the works.
That's 2014 and 15.
Yes.
And I guess they're going to be processed together by Kathleen's lab.
So yeah.
We'll have a 2-year, it'll be cool, all together at once.
Mm-hmm.
Yay! Good job, Rich!
All right.
Awesome.
The next item is in regards to early transfer of hatchery origin fish above Cougar.
Yep.
And that
yeah.
Ziller, I guess, contacted Andy.
Yeah. Jeff, you want to speak to that?
Sure. Looking at the numbers of fish that we have, you know, even the you know, if we'd have transported everything up above the dam, we'd be woefully low on fish. And Kurt's got fish sitting there right now that, the McKenzie temperatures are plenty warm right now. If we can get those fish moved up above Cougar, or at least a portion of them right now, it seems like a good idea. We've got the fish. Evidently, you've got potential for transportation, right, Kurt?
Yeah, we can start on Monday and get some of these fish out of here. That's when the next time that we'll have a driver and truck.
Okay. So it sounded like, you know, with the protocol levels, we can take about 75 per load, and at that rate, we could probably get 200 females and 100 males up there with 4 trips. And that would at least get us a start at having some fish up there for on it.
And we still want to release this hatchery component up in the Frizzell crossing area, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, same question is what I wanted.
That's what I heard, but I
was kind of asking the whole group if anybody had a comment on that, but
that's where they went last year.
That's where they went last year, and it seemed to work. So, if
we'd have to check with probably Taylor and crew to know if there's any upstream site condition issues that with this year, but he hadn't mentioned any that I'm aware of.
Okay,
I wonder how low that site's looking right now.
I mean, I would.
No, I've heard it's pretty low. Mike Hoganson was in here yesterday talking about it, and it's very low. Yeah, we may have to do a little fancy footwork to get him in there. You know, Andy, when you and I and Mike looked at that site, there was that campground was close to the bridge there. That
yeah,
we'll look at that again too. We might be able to get him out there with a roll up hose there, but we're going to kind of look at it again and see what we can do. But the off bridge.
Yeah, if that flow is super low right there off the bridge, it might be suicide.
It might be bad, yeah. So we're looking to see who we'll go up there and take a look at it and see what we can find out, and hopefully I just can't remember how close the river was right there with how long our roll up hose is. I have to take a look and do some measurements, and I think the flow was a little on that side, the campground side at that point, but then it switches back over to the other side by the bridge, but I don't know, I have to take a look at it again. That was also when water was had a much more robust flow.
Yeah, that's true.
Kurt, could you, either you or send Brian up there, just take a look at it?
Yeah, we will.
Sooner rather than later, so that, that when you get ready to go do it, we don't have to guess whether it's okay or not.
Okay. If it's deemed too shallow, where would our secondary site be? What do you folks feel? Because what we've been doing so far is go off the 430 bridge, which is above the Hard Rock site, and we can get into Hard Rock, but it's a little difficult for us there because we don't have the traction.
You don't have that four-wheel drive truck?
No, we don't.
Bridge. I mean, that's your option, right? If you,
it kind of sounds like it. I mean, the 430 bridge, I believe that's just above the Hard Rock side. I know people would like to have a little separation on what's coming out of Cougar in there, but we might not have any choice.
Right. So if we
will, we'll go take a look and see what we can find out.
The main question, I guess, I'm wondering about is that, you know, we have had some protocols in place and looking at, you know, bringing these hatchery fish up there, you're not going to meet your 25% wild and 75% hatchery maximum by bringing 300 fish up there when we only have 20 or 30 fish of unmarked fish up there. So that, you know, are we comfortable with that? That was the main question I had for the group.
I don't think we're comfortable with it, certainly not, but I mean, I don't know of options. It's kind of constrained. So it is what it is this year.
Well, a couple of thoughts. Thanks for bringing the question to the group. Jeff, this is Rich. And I mean, we're not seeing hardly any of the unclipped fish coming back, so we're not going to see that many. It looks like less than possibly 50 females unclipped would go up, unclipped. Maybe 100 if we're lucky by the end of the season, but that's probably pretty darn optimistic. So with the 400 threshold, it sounds like you're proposing to move up 200 females right now.
Right.
Well, I guess the only other thought is essentially there's going to be a lot more hatchery fish up there this year as opposed to the last couple of years, since we've been trying to maximize the number of unclipped fish versus clipped under the 400-200 thresholds. And that'll mean more F1s coming back to the system in the future, more genetic impact. So
there was only 54 females last year from Cougar that were unmarked, so we're kind of in the same boat as last year.
But there was more as a proportion unclipped fish that went up last year.
Yeah, that's true. I think I'm looking at a list here, 82 males and 54 females. That might be a little off, but fairly close, I think.
I guess my point being that with more hatchery influence, more F1s in the future coming back into the system, is there any reason to consider under the current situation those F1 return, reducing that impact by lowering the threshold?
I mean, lowering the
total number
target.
Of outplants, sorry. I would say it's maybe potentially 300 females, 200 males. Something, just somewhat of a reduction to deal with that impact. It's a balance, I know, with... I think the rationale before, I mean, is kind of a balance with production for trying to just reestablish wild Chinook, but that really isn't going to be a goal this year particularly. We're putting mostly hatchery fish up. The other is bull trout. That's my understanding. So just a suggestion to the fishermen.
You know, I want to make sure that we have a reasonable amount of spawning take place up there for both bull trout and for... you know, providing some juveniles if we ever get a downstream passage system built. We want some adults to come back and be able to use that.
Sure, and you'd get that with a little bit less production this year. But I think also I've heard from the fish agencies that the primary concern, and currently without adequate passage of cougar, is the primary population below cougar. So this is just a suggestion. Maybe you could reduce that hatchery impact from F1s returning from above cougar by reducing the total number going up. That's mostly hatchery fish this year.
And your proposal is to decrease it from 400 females and 200 males total, which would probably be something like 350 hatchery origin females and 50 wild origin females, roughly the same amount of males, half, to 300 total females, so 250-ish hatchery origin females and 200 males? I don't know that that's necessary.
The idea being is just reducing. I mean, it's hard to put a number on it.
That's the difficulty, I think, is we're making that call in terms of where you have that cutoff.
It seems a little arbitrary to me, any number you pick, actually, because we don't know the effects. we're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole right now because of the lack of having the downstream passage.
What this essentially does, hatchery fish going above cougar primarily means more of an impact to the wild population until we have passage of cougar. So that's just my suggestion.
Lance, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I hear the concern, but I don't know. I'm looking at the numbers and where we're at. My concern is more just on the demographic risks over the genetic risk. And it's important to keep in mind that the natural Chinook coming back to the trap are predominantly offspring from 100% hatchery outplants. So we know that the hatchery program is producing fish, and that's good. But the returns at cougar in the numbers that I heard earlier for this year, we're definitely on a downward decline in total numbers back to the trap. So it's clearly not productive system. So, reducing the threshold, yeah, I guess we could. I'm not sure if it really provides any benefit.
Just a suggestion. Thanks.
Well, I keep going back to thinking about what's been going on above Detroit, and that's very large numbers of natural origin fish coming back because of very large numbers of hatchery origin fish being placed up there. And the situation we have at cougar is that we presume we have much higher downstream migrant mortality, and that's why we don't see that kind of response, the same response as we're seeing at Foster also, and at Detroit or North Sinia. Decreasing the number of fish up there, and I think it's the same thing that Lance was saying, will absolutely decrease the total number of natural origin recruits coming back. And I can't see that as a good thing. We want to see something like more than 1,000 natural origin fish coming back. And then you're talking about a population that the selection can work on, and then maybe we can start getting a reasonable chance of getting a natural selection to get local adaptation. But if we drop our total number of spawners up there by a third, then, is that right, a quarter? Then we only get 150 fish back, we're going to get a quarter less than that.
Certainly the total returns would drop, but what we have seen from the genetic pedigree work is the fitness is different between hatchery and wild fish. So those returns influence the wild population. Although it'd be a large study to really measure that impact on the main population, we've seen it directly above cougar. So the F1s returning are going to influence the larger population.
Downstream.
I just wanted to put that out there. there's a demographic and genetic aspects that need to be balanced. I hear that.
Well, so to remind folks, I mean, we're kind of in the circumstances where we're going to have to live with higher hatchery numbers because, just to remind folks, 2011, the number of natural origin females collected at Cougar Trap, 150, next year 190, then it started tapering off dramatically, 94, last year was 65, of which only 54 went above Cougar. And this year is probably going to be even lower than number than that, even if we put all of them up there without the new recycling effort. So it's clearly in a more hatchery fish are needed up there because of the declining production.
It probably wouldn't be a bad idea to go back and take a look at our release numbers above the dam and then look at the adult returns from those just to refresh ourselves, but my suspicion is that when we were releasing more adults up there, we were getting more adults back.
And it's also worth looking at Jeremy Romer's basically spawner recruit functions that he presented at the Science Review, where more spawners up meant more juveniles captured at the small trap entering the reservoir. So it didn't appear, as I recall, that we maximized or reached a carrying capacity. Pretty squishy numbers.
I don't want to give my bull trout population a bad name, but those numbers have increased over the years also, and they probably are having some predation effect on the population up there.
Any more comments on that item?
We are ready with all of the sampling equipment to process those samples at Mackenzie Hatchery as soon as somebody pulls the trigger and says, let's go.
So we are going to move those fish from Mackenzie Hatchery out now or next week, whenever Kirk can do it, instead of hanging on to them. Is that the result of this discussion?
That's my recommendation.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It would be mine.
Lance?
Yeah, I mean, it's inevitable. It's going to have to happen given the numbers, so might as well do it sooner rather than later.
200 and 100.
But if OSW could let us know in advance of the next outplant so the group can know the details there, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
And that was 200 and...
100.
100?
200 females and 100 males.
Cool.
All right. Next item, which I think Cam will be speaking to, I'm not sure, but the radius telemetry on an unclipped fish above Detroit, is that you? Or?
Yeah, I already just touched on it. Basically, all I was going to say is that we run into a little bit of a snag right there because we have to get a special use permit for installing the radio receivers with the Forest Service, and they're kind of jacked up with all of the fire dangers. So we come up with an alternative.
Okay.
With Greg's permission, I haven't managed to talk to him yet. We'd like to install a receiver in the upstairs at the Marion Forks hatchery, just plug it into the wall and then have that, because it's got line of sight on the river. And that isn't a permitted, doesn't require a permit. But anything else on the ground, anywhere around there, requires a Forest Service permit, and the fires have just got the ranger just jacked. He can't do anything else but fight fires. And then we rely on mobile tracking to chase fish around that are released at the Dry Creek site until the special use permit comes through. It might happen right away. I've been chatting with Darren Neff, the biologist, but
I talked to Darren yesterday. He's just waiting for Grady to give him the permission to put it on Forest Service land. It doesn't sound like it'll be a big issue.
It's just taking time, that's all. So,
yeah.
But with you on the phone, can we plug in one of those SRX 600s in the green-fronted box upstairs in the shop and use that as a fixed station for now?
I'll have to go through the Historical Society and make sure that it fits in the motif of the hatchery, but that should take 6 to 8 months, so I think we'll be okay.
You're looking at a boat ramp that you sent an email out in terms of ownership. Is that...
That was if the boat ramp is owned by the Corps, we thought we could stick it there. But we don't. Who owns that stuff? I don't know. It's on Forest Service land, but it's an Army Corps boat ramp, and
it's not ours.
Hey, we came up with an alternative. I think it'll work. Okay. For now, and then the permit process will go through. We do not want to get sideways with the Forest Service people. So far, they have been awesome at letting us be in their rivers. So, you know, and talking to the Brighton Bush people and just dealing with them and the weirs and all that stuff. I don't want to get sideways with them, so we're going to let their process go in the background for now. Deal with a contingency plan for those who are ourselves.
Cam, the only thing I was concerned of was their South Shore site. It sounds like that receiver doesn't go all the way across. It only goes down about 30 feet. If you look at the temperature streams, I think those fish will be well below the 30-foot mark. I don't know if they can move that up towards Hoover at all.
I'll ask him.
Okay. I don't think that site will catch many fish moving into the reservoir that far down and doesn't penetrate where the fish will probably migrate.
So just to give you a perspective, we are all excited about the fact that 70% of the returning adults were produced above Detroit for a couple of years in a row, and that looked pretty cool. But the flip side of that is 30% weren't, and what are those 30% going to do? We don't know. So we're putting wild fish up into Dry Creek, and if 100 go in there and 70 go up, but 30 go into the reservoir to look for something else, I don't know. Anyway, we want to get radio tags in, and we got a permit in place for 20 tags, and I think we'll learn something about this year.
And they put 9 tags in on Monday.
Yeah.
All right. Any other questions? The last item on our agenda is that memorandum of coordination that... Did you write that, Andy? For the current protocol... Oh, I think I wrote that. So basically, it's a memorandum that just documents what we're doing at Cougar this year. That's all it is. It's something that we've done in the past in the Columbia to document things that aren't in any of our plans or protocols. And it allows, one, the documentation to occur, but also everyone to comment on it and get their 2 cents in terms of what we're doing. So I don't know if there's any questions on...
Is there a comment period for that? Oops.
There is. I have to look to see.
The Cougar one?
Yeah, I think.
Come and passed. Yeah. Because Bernadette, you provided some comments. Yeah.
Did I comment?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I did.
And really, it was a proposal that was brought out by ODF&W, and then Lance, I think, provided input as well. And I put together the initial memo, but to ensure that I captured kind of what the intent was, that's why I got sent out to you guys for comment as well. Any parting thoughts? That was the last agenda item.
Did you want to speak to what we want to do moving forward with the WFOP as far as having more details in there and then...
Oh, yeah, I can do that a little bit.
Change forms?
Yeah, sure. I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
So, the Atlantic Fish Operations Plan has some language in it that borrowed concepts from the Columbia River where they use these coordination forms, and that's why we've been seeing these coordination forms. They're in there, and then now that my supervisor, Tammy Mackey, who worked on the Columbia, she's pretty keen on documenting these things in these forms. And basically what they are anytime we have some sort of coordination effort going on amongst the agencies that either one, deviates from the fish operations plan, or two, since the plan just came out, potentially isn't adequately addressed in the plan. And so it's to document those types of things within our group. And then towards the end of the year, the hope is we can review these coordination forms and we can then use those to update the plan as per everyone's input on an annual basis.
So as an example, we started out planning unclip fish above Detroit. Does that need one?
That's it. Oh, that one? Gosh, it'd be...
What are you
talking
about?
Well, see, we're just getting
changing so differences from what the plan is.
I think so, that's a good idea.
No, I think there should be one. And since we're just kind of getting started with this process, that's one that we haven't done yet.
So with the Willamette Fish Operations Plan, eventually, what we hope is that it would have specifics in there for Detroit. And we would have the disposition numbers and say, here's the goal. 900 for the North Sandium, Payne Stem, 600 for the Brighton Bush. These are the sites we use. This is the operation. And then if we want to have a change in that operation, then that could be proposed by whatever agency wants to, and then we would talk about it. And if it's the right thing to do, we'd move forward with it and then change the operations plan. Okay. Right. So what we were talking about with outplanting at Cougar is that in the past we were going with the September 1st recycling date. That was the old operation. We have a new operation. We all agreed that, or, you know, with some discussion, that this is what we're going to move forward with, right? And so then this is the new plan. So as we kind of finalize some of these outplanting strategies in the various different sub-basins, we want to reflect that in the WFOP and the Willamette Fish Operations Plan.
Updated annually, those coordination memos would be folded in if they were a long-term change.
Exactly.
Right. So I guess what Chris and I have talked about, and maybe my question to the group is, as far as what we would want to put in the WFOP moving forward for Cougar, and if we want the operations that we're going to go with this year to be what the normal operation is, status quo, or if we would want the September 1st recycling date to be more of the status quo. So then, if there are alterations to that in the future, then someone could propose that and we would change going forward. So I guess if people have thoughts about what they would like to see is, what is the baseline standard operation? We should talk about that.
And maybe we could schedule a meeting later on this year and go through what kind of a year review what we did and determine what we think is going to be more permanent, what's more ad hoc and on-the-fly management type actions that you can't really set in stone. You just kind of have to adaptively manage as you go.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we can, we're going to have some chunks of information there that we don't have in our hand right now that we can use for that determination. I'm not sure I would be in a position to make a determination on what we want to put in that thing right now. Is there a deadline that we're trying to meet?
No. I think as long as we keep in mind that these things that we're doing throughout the year, that if there are things that are going to be done more regularly, that we update the plan to reflect that and we capture those types of things.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of some of the scrambling decisions we had to make over the course of the last year. I wouldn't want to have to draft descriptions of why we were doing this. Like we made a decision to outplant unclipped fish captured at Dexter into Little Fall Creek. And that's an emergency measure. And I hope we never have to do that again. HGMPs will get approved and we'll have other options for the use of those fish. But
and those things I don't think we would.
Okay.
But we would have maybe a memorandum that says, we did this and this is why. It was an emergency and hopefully it doesn't happen. And the plan is more than just hatchery operations or fish trap operations. It encompasses when we take our turbine units out of service as well.
Oh yeah, and we prepared one for the, I think it was the lookout point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we're working on figuring out how to best kind of coordinate that effort in terms of updating those types of things as well. But a lot of the stuff that we talk about that are in the plan is within this team, as it's one of the teams that meets on a monthly basis and talks about these things, whereas flow is more real-time management. Fish passage is more fish facility.
I didn't realize your flow team was actually real time. I'd envision this senior biologist thinking about flowing water through the system and planning for the future. I didn't realize. Like, should we open this valve now? No, tomorrow?
This year it is, for sure. It seems to be one of those things where there's not a whole lot of interest in that group until we have the situation we're in now.
And then there's 30 people on every call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I get a lot of participation now, and it's great. It's awesome. And then when the crisis is gone, everyone disappears. So I change it to monthly meetings at that point.
No thank yous.
So I guess I'd propose that when this group, just focusing on hatchery operations and trapping operations, when this group has a change that they envision has to happen or is going to happen or is being forced on us, that we express that as a change and then decide collectively whether it has risen to the level where it needs to be just part of the monthly minutes, or whether it has to be something that has a monk. Tell me again.
MOC. Yeah. Memorandum of Coordination.
Okay, monk. Yeah. That's unfortunate. Let's not call it a monk. It's not monk. Monk.
Or just MOC.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does.
Mm-hmm. We'll decide. Has this issue risen to a point where we really have to kind of document it for posterity in a formal way? Yeah. I think the minutes are also doing that for smaller changes and just reporting. That works fine, too.
Yeah.
It's all online and accessible.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else on that one? I had one more thing to mention. So kind of along those lines, with memorandums of coordination or with more formal kind of, we need agencies' opinions on this emergency operation now. We thought it might be a good idea to designate who are quote-unquote voting members of the HMT and who are the representatives for each agency, for primes, but also for alternates, so those people who are out of the office or unavailable. So that if the Corps has an operation, or if UWEB has an operation, or whoever, and we need to get concurrence or non-concurrence, whichever way, from agencies, these are the people we go to.
Because
right now, with minutes, with agendas, with whatever else, it goes out to this huge, large group that includes all sorts of different people that are not core group HMT members. So it'd be nice to have, for the record, for us, who are the voting members of HMT. And I don't know if for ODFW if we want to have like John as more the hatchery manager coordination piece and Bernadette as another kind of representative from ODFW or whatever, but it'd be something good to designate.
I am the hatchery RME. That's my role. That's
so,
it.
So you don't get to vote.
So I don't get to vote. Perfect. Perfect. Excellent.
No, I would think, you know, for us, it probably would be us, yes. And then the next alternate actually would be Scott and Steve. So you'd go up instead of down for the alternate.
Okay.
Because it would be that kind of...
I'm thinking you're out of the office.
Yeah.
We need...
Then you'd,
in that opinion.
You'd have to, I think you'd go to a propagation program manager.
Okay.
And, I mean, ultimately you'd go to the regional supervisor, but, you know, that's my next supervisor, but we'd run, you know, that route. I think you could get a authoritative answer from those people.
That makes sense.
I know with flow management we have this primary contact, secondary contact listed. And it works fairly well, but a lot of times it's me talking to a district biologist with the state to kind of get their concurrence as well. But it's good to have that kind of...
Well, in my universe, it's just Tom, then me. I don't have anybody below me that would answer any questions at that level, so it's just me. But if you were an alternate, you'd have to start higher, and I'd say start at Tom, and he'd immediately push it to me anyway. If I'm there. If I'm not there, he'd make a decision. Mm-hmm. So for a hatchery RME type activity, so responding surveys, hatchery sampling, that kind of stuff, if those issues arise.
Yeah, if it has to do with any kind of fish management issues, then it still has to go through the DB.
So that would be DB.
And maybe that's the contact talking to the DB, or the DB is the contact, or whatever whatever we just end up doing.
Yeah, and you know, Bernadette can certainly be the primary contact, and then she can contact the DB dependent on the...
Unheardable.
I don't know how you want to do it, but...
So maybe I'll put together a little list of who the primes are, who the alternates are, and can distribute to you guys, and if you feel like that works, or you want to make edits or changes to it, then we can do that, and then we'll kind of have that as part of a record.
Cool.
Cool.
We would love to have a hierarchical arrangement of who supervises who in the Army Corps of Engineers too.
Oh yeah.
The only thing we've got right there is this. It's called a flowchart, except it's a bubble with everybody's name in it in the bubble, and that's it. And that's the craziest thing. Who do you report to? I found out. One linkage. Tammy Gritz. That's it. There you go.
No, we all work in the same bubble.
I'll give you one more. It's Tammy, Chris, Andy. Yeah. There you go. You got a triangle now.
Is Tammy your boss?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then these guys have separate, they're in a separate division, so that's why it gets confusing to outside folks a lot of times.
Right.
Because we have both biologists and operations and then planning as well.
Just talk to the colonel.
I never.
That was a joke. Hey, I got one more thing for the good of the order.
Sure, Liz.
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
Go ahead. Sorry, Liz. I'm just joking.
Hey, our agencies have been talking a little bit about doing some outreach for the reintroduction program above the dams. And several of us kind of put some thoughts down on paper. And so I have these posters that I'm supposed to get today. They're laminated. They're like 11 by 17, something like that. And all of our agencies had signed off on it. So Corps, NIMS, ODFW, and then the Forest Service. So the PR, public affairs people are all on board with it. So as soon as I get these, I'll call folks and figure out a way to get them out to the field guys, and so they get distributed. So it's essentially, you know, cause the message is, you know, you're in the title is "You Are in Salmon Country. Please protect these fish." And it's got a beautiful wild Chinook on it, and then it tells about, you know, the reintroduction program above the core dams and stuff. So just a little outreach on the outplanting program that we can distribute.
Cool. Hey,
Lance,
that's great.
Who was the point of contact at the Corps?
I forgot who it was. I'm not sure, but they said it was okay.
They said it was okay.
No, I'm just kidding. No, it was Ian. I ran it through Ian, and he did all of the what he needed to do.
Okay, thanks.
And gave the thumbs up.
Thanks.
All right.
Cool. Thanks, Lance.
You sure we want to be telling people this is where we're putting the fish?
It doesn't say that. There's no lat longs on the salmon holes.
All right.
Yeah, we'll put
it.
They know that they're already, right? It's just reiterating an important message.
Yep. Done. Yeah, we've got crews out there every day. Give them a stapler.
Okay.
So if there's nothing else, our next hatchery management team meeting is scheduled right during the week of AFS.
Oh, I'm not going to be here.
So you're not going to be at AFS, or you're not going to be...
I'm going to be at AFS.
Okay.
Yeah. Chris grabbed me by the collar and said, talk about this.
Well, I'll be at AFS as well, and I think you will too, right, Andy?
Mm-hmm.
I will
be.
I'll be there too.
So we might want to think about rescheduling and
Let's skip one.
I'd say skip it, and we can do a phone call if there's anything pressing that needs to be discussed.
The next one is what, the 16th of September.
Yeah, 16th of September. Okay. We're going to run into anything we can think of hand. But we'll...
Just a suggestion. Is there a date the week ahead of AFS that you might leave as a kind of a check-in time that in case something does come up?
Yeah, maybe we'll leave August 12th as a placeholder. That's just the Wednesday before. Does that work for folks? I guess similar time.
And just have it there. If it's not necessary, just cancel it. This has been such an odd year that I I would think that something else odd will happen.
Yeah.
Lots more water, that would be about 90 degrees.
It's going to start raining.
All right, we'll send out an email the whole August 12th with the time, and then if it's quiet, or we can do a short call also. That's another way of doing it. We'll figure that out. I'll put in the email what we plan on doing. So, any parting thoughts?
Pray for rain. I heard that a few times.
Yeah. See you, everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah, all right. Thanks.
That's Manny's theory is that all of summer steelhead are holding off the mouth of the Columbia, waiting for a huge rainstorm at the end of July, and they will come sweeping in.
When does that happen?
I mean, that's just an optimist.
You have to know Manny.
He's an optimist.
The biggest optimist in the history of optimism.
I know they'll be coming. They're going to put the buckets out to get
you. You know, man, they're coming. They're coming now. They're on their way. Oh well.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to those fish. That's so weird. I don't think they croaked on the way downstream.
It's ocean. Or could be technically something in the estuary, but something nailed them. And it was coincident with that blog.
I used to